Hey there, welcome to the About Your Body podcast. I'm Rachel Holt, the founder and one-woman show behind About Your Body. I'm a visual designer who has an ever-growing interest in the biofemale reproductive system. I want to use my design skills to empower people, especially young girls, to learn all about how incredible their body is and what it can do. I would like to acknowledge that this podcast was recorded on stolen land, the land of the Awabakal people. Hi, everyone. I am so happy to be back on the About Your Body podcast. The past few months have been emotionally challenging. So thank you for bearing with me. And in full transparency, my mental health has seriously declined. However, I am working on it. I've been working very, very hard on it. And I'm really excited to be back working on About Your Body again, because About Your Body is my favorite thing in the world. So I have new posts coming to educate you all about lots of different things. I'm not going to give away what any of them are. And we've got a full season of the podcast lined up. So welcome to the first episode of season 2 of the About Your Body podcast. To kick things off, our first guest of the season is Mia Robertson. Mia has a Bachelor of Health Science, and she now practices as a naturopath, helping people with a biofemale reproductive system understand and manage their hormones. She is very passionate about helping people make informed choices about their health. So in this episode, she breaks down some really key concepts for us, like polycystic ovarian syndrome, pheromones, blood glucose, and I also ask Mia to give us a simple breakdown on what the menstrual cycle actually is and what is typically happening to our hormones during different stages of our cycles. Then we get into a really interesting topic, which is that of pandemic periods. We delve into the science behind why so many people have reported their menstrual cycle goes out of the whack when they're faced with serious stress, and in particular, the pandemic. So a trigger warning for this episode: Mia shares with us her conception story and her struggle with contraception. So at the start of this conversation, we talk quite openly about miscarriage. Later on in the episode, we also discuss eating disorders. Lastly, I have been locked down at my mum's house for the past few months without my good podcast microphone. So I apologize. The audio for this episode and the next few episodes is not as good as usual. I'm so sorry, but it will improve. And I hope you can bear with me through it. So without any further ado, let's talk to Mia. Hi, Mia. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Rachel. It's so nice to meet you.
You're welcome. I'm very excited to hear everything that you have to say. And I think this will be very, very valuable for all of my listeners, a lot of whom are young women. Would love if we could just start, if you could tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Cool. So I'm a naturopath. I have a Bachelor of Health Science, and I've been practicing as a naturopath, specializing in women's health for the last 15 years. I love what I do. Do a lot of fertility and preconception, menopause, helping women transition off contraception, learning about their bodies and supporting their bodies to get back into balance naturally. Got 2 daughters. So I'm a mom of 2 girls, 15 and 12, and I'm originally from Cairns. Born and bred North Queensland, and moved to the Gold Coast to study to be a naturopath, and met my husband down here, and yeah, just settled in.
Lovely. I'm very jealous of your Gold Coast lifestyle right now. Even though you're in lockdown, it's so much nicer to be in lockdown on the Gold Coast than in Sydney.
The winters are pretty good, but they're even better in Cairns. So, and they're not in lockdown at all. So my mum and my sister up there are loving life. Could always be better.
Did you always want to be a naturopath or do something with women's health? Like, what made you get into this?
So interestingly enough, when I was 15, I started working at a health food store up in Cairns, and there was a naturopath who was working in that store, and I was just like, wow, she's so cool. She knows so much. She's helping so many people. It must be so rewarding. And from then on, I was like dead set on becoming a naturopath. So pretty well made up my mind then, had a year off like a gap year after I finished school, and then started studying from then on, and just really love the industry. You know, it's so rewarding helping people on a variety of different levels, mind, body, spirit, holistically. And yeah, it's great industry to be in. I went more into women's health when I was having my own issues. I suppose, you sort of get that path shown to you when you're going through or experiencing your own stuff. And so I was having problems with being on the pill. So I was experiencing a lot of anxiety and depression, and my body was doing all these not great things when I was on it. So yeah, I decided to come off the pill and sort my hormones out after being on the pill. And I actually had PCOS, irregular cycles, and that's why I went onto the pill in the first place. And so after coming off the pill, I did fall pregnant, but then subsequently had a miscarriage, and that was preceding the birth of my daughter, about 3 months before I fell pregnant with her, and then had another sort of threatened miscarriage at 12 weeks. And then breastfed my daughter. She, you know, hung in there. Obviously, the pregnancy, she hung in there, and then breastfed her. Fell pregnant with my second daughter. They're 2.5 years apart. And I was still breastfeeding my first when I fell pregnant, but just really felt quite drained. So stopped breastfeeding when I was, I think, 12 weeks, and I thought, yeah, I'm past like the danger period, I'm feeling okay, you know, I can stop breastfeeding. But then I had another threatened miscarriage at 14 weeks with my second daughter. But again, she hung in there, and breastfed her following her birth for another 2 years. And at the end of it, I was pretty exhausted. I went from, I guess, you know, being on the pill and then having a miscarriage and then, you know, pregnancy, breastfeeding, pregnancy again, breastfeeding again, and, you know, having two young ones and working as a naturopath at the time in quite a busy fertility clinic. I was exhausted, and I wasn't really looking after myself as well as I could have been. I was just sort of in survival mode at that time. I'd been working in fertility, and I was in that clinic for about 5 years, learning a lot about, you know, women's health and hormonal health and how to help women prepare for pregnancy. And I guess all of that knowledge was wonderful for me to start helping myself. And so I had the Mirena in at the time because other forms of contraception were not helpful for me. So I chose that. And then, I just really had like a light bulb moment where I was like, okay, well, now it's time. Time to focus on me and look after myself, because I know if I'm looking after me, then I'll be looking after my family and my clients and everybody else better, and having that ripple effect. So had the Mirena out and really put myself on a path of trying to do all the things that I had known to be helpful for hormonal health. To rebalance my body. And at that time, I was experiencing a lot of hormonal breakouts. I was really premenstrual, quite bloated. My cycles were irregular, struggling a lot with hirsutism, male pattern hair growth. And so I was like, I just got to sort this out. So yeah. I started working with some herbal medicine and nutritional medicine, making some diet lifestyle adjustments. And yeah, the culmination of learning about my body and how I was responding at that time to different herbal formulations and nutritional support just helped to keep me going in direction. And I ended up coming up with the formula for my product, which is FEM21, and started down that path of using that regularly and started using that with clients and getting great results. And yeah, here we are now, 6 years later with FEM21, doing amazing things. So that was, I guess, where it was birthed from, was from my own issues hormonally, from a combination, I guess, of, you know, my past history of PCOS and miscarriage and adrenal issues and gut issues and wanting to support my body holistically. Yeah,
I can't imagine how difficult all of that must have been for you. Thank you for sharing that. And it's, I think a lot of the greatest things in life are unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, born out of people's personal struggles. I started About Your Body for a really similar reason. Like, I was having so many just minor gynecological issues, but when they all pile on top of each other, it gets quite overwhelming. And I became passionate about not wanting other, you know, 17-year-old girls, 14-year-old girls, etc., to have to suffer through that. And then realized that people who are much older also are not educated about their body. So that ties in really well to the whole mission of About Your Body. Your story is like just being, I want to empower women to be able to know what works best for them and different versions of contraception and different versions of different alterations to their lifestyle will work different for everybody. And it's, there's no one size fits all. Unfortunately, I think we do treat hormonal health as though it is one size fits all. And thank you for sharing your story about your miscarriage. That is so heartbreaking to hear, but I'm so glad that something, you know, you've made such a feat out of it. You're encouraging so many women. Thank you for what you do.
And I think it's something that probably needs to be talked about and shared more often, to know that, you know, there's a community of women out there that are going through or have been through difficult, you know, pregnancies and have experienced miscarriages and the losses of their babies, to understand, you know, why it happened, how they can, support themselves mentally and physically for subsequent pregnancies, and know that there is, you know, things that you can do to educate yourself so that you can have a healthy pregnancy and support your body and the growth of your baby. And we're all different, you know, and having that individualized approach to your circumstance, in terms of like a plan, a supportive plan, and blood tests to have an insight into what's going on for you and what the contributing factors are for you, so that, yeah, you can have a healthy pregnancy and healthy baby.
And I love that you touched on also taking care of yourself in order to take care of your family. I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but I definitely think that when a woman gets pregnant, it's all about the baby, and it might sort of be about her while she's pregnant, but then as soon as the baby's born, mostly people do want to know about the baby. Of course, it's so exciting, like you have this newborn child, how amazing, but it's really important that women also know that their bodies are very, very valuable, and they're not just there to give birth and then be, you know, tossed out the door. Like, your health is still matters after you give birth. Thank you for touching on the fact that you fell pregnant while breastfeeding, because I think a lot of people think that that is a total, like, you cannot fall pregnant while you're breastfeeding. Listeners, please be aware, you can. It is not a foolproof method of contraception.
Exactly.
I would also love to get into PCOS later on. That's so important. Yeah. And I'm not sure if I think we use the abbreviation, but for everyone listening, PCOS is polycystic ovarian syndrome. But to start with, do you mind if you could give us a simple rundown of the menstrual cycle? Because I think a lot of people know that they get their period, but their knowledge just kind of stops there. Like, if you could give the listeners a basic overview of what it is, and what your hormones and body are doing through the different stages of the cycle. That would be so helpful.
Yeah. So break it up into sort of like four parts, the cycle. So each of the parts can be different lengths, but just to make it easy, I'm just going to break it up into weeks, into 4 weeks.
Perfect.
And so the first week of your cycle is your period week. And that's obviously when your uterine lining is shedding the blood that it's built up from the cycle prior in the 3 weeks after the period's been. So the period is a shedding of the lining of the uterus, and your hormones are at baseline at that point. So we're at the lowest levels for estrogen, progesterone, LH, FSH are all fairly flat at that time. After period week finishes, it's then a building of estrogen, LH and FSH in the lead up to ovulation. So this is what's called our follicular phase. And the follicular phase, we'll say it's like another week leading up to ovulation, and then ovulation happens at the end of that week. So ovulation is when we're peaking for estrogen, and estrogen levels are at the highest at that time in the cycle. And we're getting a surge in FSH, which is follicle stimulating hormone, and luteinizing hormone. And luteinizing hormone is the trigger hormone that comes from the pituitary gland to tell the ovaries to release an egg. The follicle is like a little bubble inside the ovary that houses the egg. And so follicle stimulating hormone develops that follicle inside the egg, develops that bubble inside the, inside the ovary. And so that follicle can develop mature for quite some time. So the research is between 3 to 5 months of follicle development, and then that follicle matures, and then the egg inside that is growing as well for about 3 months. So the follicle contains like fertilizer, I say, and the egg's like a little seed, and mm-hmm. So the egg's maturing from that fertilizer, and then luteinizing hormone is like the pin that pops the follicle. And then the egg gets released. And then after that follicle has been popped, egg's released, in the last 2 weeks of the cycle, or two phases of the cycle, is our luteal phase. And then that busted or popped follicle produces progesterone. And then progesterone continues to thicken the endometrial lining to prepare for pregnancy. And so it thickens and nourishes the endometrial lining within the uterus in the luteal phase. And if a, you know, conception doesn't occur, if we're not pregnant, then that sheds with our period after the luteal phase has finished. The luteal phase is really important for the progesterone levels to meet and balance out estrogen. And so after ovulation, when estrogen levels are high, the body needs to metabolize estrogen and clear it out of the system. And progesterone comes in that luteal phase to balance that ratio with estrogen. And often a lot of hormonal imbalances can occur when there's an issue between that ratio of estrogen and progesterone.
That is, wow, thank you. You just like covered everything in 3 minutes. We'll probably get back onto that hormonal imbalance issue quite soon. And I know that with PCOS, the way that I like to explain it, of course, you were just describing the overall menstrual cycle then, but people always ask me about PCOS. And of course, I'm not a medical professional whatsoever. So I just give a very, very brief explanation. I usually say there's a loop where everything works together and something goes wrong with the loop when it comes to PCOS. So the metaphors that you gave just then and the analogies were really helpful. Thank you. That is so, so good to know. Do you work with young women who don't understand their periods a lot in your work, or generally do people come to you by the time they're like trying to conceive?
I guess I have a wide range of clients in terms of ages. So I have done some education with girls in their teens at schools in that environment in year 11 and 12, just again teaching them about their bodies and their hormones. But I'd probably say the majority of women that I'm seeing in my practice are, you know, somewhat aware about what's going on with their cycles, but a lot of them don't have that in-depth, obviously, understanding about what's going on hormonally, and tying in what's happening hormonally with the symptoms you're experiencing. It's really empowering, because then you understand what your body is telling you, because those symptoms are a reflection of what's going on internally from a hormonal perspective. So it can be really helpful to understand that, oh, okay, these sore breasts mean that, or this headache means that, or this mood means this, or my bowels are slowing down because of that. And so having that understanding then helps them to manage their body better and make healthier choices for themselves so that their body's supported.
Amazing. Yes, so helpful. Thank you. Now that we've covered basically what the menstrual cycle is, I think it's a great time to move on to the topic of pandemic periods. Are you able to outline for us some of the science behind, like, what is the science behind periods getting out of whack with circumstantial changes? Like, a very good example is lockdown. It sounds so woohoo, but so many people have reported that with lockdown and with the pandemic, their periods have just, they may have had completely regular periods beforehand their entire life, and now they've gone completely out of whack. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, and I certainly think there's two aspects to this. One is the isolation side of things, but from a biochemical perspective, it's really influenced by our stress hormones. So the pandemic has been massive on people's mental health and their stress levels, and having, you know, their normal choices and freedoms of going out and seeing people and connecting and socializing or exercising in classes or whatever it might be, you know, just snap taken away from us, and then we're left to, you know, adapt. And the body is, you know, it is resilient by all means, but also really sensitive too. And, you know, adaptation and evolution doesn't just happen instantly, it takes time. And so usually we're going through a stressful period to cause, you know, adaptation and evolution to happen. And so this is what we're experiencing at this time, is these levels of higher stress. And stress hormones massively impact our menstrual cycles and our reproductive hormones. So when we're having high levels of adrenaline and cortisol circulating, and we're in that fight or flight state, we're trying to problem solve, or, you know, reschedule things, or trying to make the best out of the situation and stay positive when we're really feeling like, oh, this is totally shit, and, you know, it's like imploding. It's this fight or resistance that we're having within the body for trying to carry on and keep going, but we're dealing with these higher levels of stress hormones. So that inflammation that's caused from stress impacts the signaling between our brain, our pituitary gland, and our ovaries. And so it's like puppet strings. And so when we're under stress, those puppet strings and that communication doesn't happen as efficiently or smoothly. And so then we're getting irregulations in our cycle length and ovulation occurring. Now, on top of that, ovulation timing even if we are ovulating, after ovulation, progesterone levels are secreted. And progesterone is like our calming, anti-inflammatory hormone. It makes everything okay. It helps with the levels of serotonin and dopamine in our brain, helps us to feel calm. It's a muscle relaxant as well. So when we're in stress and cortisol levels are elevated, the body is saying that's the priority. We need to deal with that fight or flight response. And reproduction becomes low priority in the body because we're not feeling sort of safe and secure. And so progesterone that's released after ovulation converts into our stress hormones. So the stress response robs the reproductive system of progesterone. And then that further worsens symptoms around our periods in terms of period pain and PMS and sleeping issues and mood issues and sore breaths and inflammation and bloating and a whole variety of things. Headaches and stuff like that as well can all come under that. So this is where this phenomenon of this stressful period that we're going through in this pandemic affecting women's menstrual cycles. It's really that cortisol, progesterone, ovulation timing link.
Oh, wow. I did not know that about progesterone transitioning into a stress hormone. That's really, really interesting. Yeah. Thank you. So that's that explains I'm sure many of the listeners will have had that thing where you're really stressed one month and your period just doesn't arrive.
Yeah.
And then you get more stressed because you're like, why isn't it here? What does this mean? On top of that, what are some other common reasons for missing periods? Doesn't have to be related to the pandemic at all, just in general life.
Well, just going off a little bit, just on that topic of a little bit woo-woo and periods and pandemics, is the lockdown situation. So for women, we are picking up signals through pheromones from other women that we're hanging around with. So if we're in an office environment, for example, working with a lot of women, or we're living in a house with a lot of other women, generally find over time women's menstrual cycles, so long as they're not on contraception, will sync up, and so women will get their periods at the same time. And this phenomenon has, you know, just been a part of our physiology since tribal days, when it was safe for women to menstruate at the same time, and it was a vulnerable time for women. And so they wanted it to sort of all happen at once and get it over and done with, and they could all band together and protect each other at that time. So that phenomenon is still occurring when we're working with other women. And so we're picking up just subconscious pheromones from other women that helps our body then to sink in and get those signals about when our cycles will occur with those other women. So when we're in lockdown and we're isolating and we're not picking up on those same signals as we normally would if we're working in that environment with women, that then our periods do sort of freak out and go, oh, wait, I'm not getting those same signals that I used to. So what's happening now? So that can be another contributing factor to women's cycles becoming out of whack, especially if they've been working in a, say, in an office environment with other women, and then all of a sudden they're at home by themselves.
So interesting. Could you explain what a pheromone is?
Oh, yes. So a pheromone is a hormone that is secreted through the skin that's picked up through the olfactory or the nose. And so it's a smell, but it's not something that we're conscious of. It's also what influences, like, attraction to men and women. So pheromones are secreted, you know, through our skin, our sweat, our hair, and how our body smells and feels to somebody else.
Other than that, I guess I might just want to add in for the listeners that otherwise, if you're missing your period, whether you're in lockdown or not, it could be to do with if you're not eating enough and you're extremely low on iron, and perhaps even got an eating disorder. I think a lot of people think it's normal for their period to just not arrive, but if it's not arriving for a long time, I highly recommend you see your GP or speak to somebody about it, because it is supposed to arrive every now and again. And hopefully it'll be arriving regularly. But that follows quite well onto what I wanted to talk about next, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. Could you just tell us first what PCOS is, and then I'd love to get into what the symptoms of it are.
PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome, and so it just essentially means that there's multiple follicles that are on the surface of the ovary, but they haven't matured, they haven't developed, so they're in an immature state, and this can prevent the ovary from functioning normally and then allowing mature, healthy follicles to come to the surface of the ovary for ovulation. Like, imagine instead of the ovaries being smooth, they look like grapes, a bunch of grapes.
Great and analogy, so, yeah.
So the thing is with PCOS, symptomatically, we can experience irregularities in cycles. So ovulation doesn't occur in a regular pattern. It can happen when a mature follicle finally finds its way through the immature ones, and that can occur for some women once every 6 months, every 12 months, every 3 months, every 2 months. It can be very inconsistent. And so with PCOS, because we're not having that regular ovulatory pattern, we're also not experiencing the same levels of estrogen fluctuations that occur prior to ovulation and progesterone fluctuations that occur after ovulation. So essentially there's lower levels of estrogen and progesterone with women that have PCOS and higher levels of testosterone. And testosterone then contributes to symptoms such as mouth pattern hair growth or acne, or issues with how we're gaining weight and losing it. It can contribute to hair loss. It also can impact our moods as well. PCOS then affects women on a scale. So for some women, they can have a more severe presentation of symptoms and more irregular patterns of ovulation, whilst other women can be lower down on that severity scale and have tendencies towards PCOS, which may be like just higher levels of testosterone or androgens, which can lead to male pattern hair growth or acne, but they can still have a regular cycle. So it does look different depending on the individual, and it's certainly a condition that can be supported to move down on that severity scale, so that you can have a regular ovulatory pattern, and that's when your body is really at its healthiest, is when that's occurring. But what can be confusing for some women is a phenomenon that happens post coming off the pill, which is a temporary phase of PCOS. And another phenomenon, or the difference, I should say, is between amenorrhea, which is an absent period generally due to stress on the body from a calorie deficit and low body weight, which can happen when there's over-exercising and not eating enough, or there's an eating disorder that's contributing to a calorie deficit and there's stress on the system. And that causes, you know, this absent period. But with PCOS, because there's an irregularity in the timing of ovulation and periods occurring, it can, some people can have this confusion of, is it amenorrhea, you know, because I'm underweight, or is it PCOS? And there's a different diagnostic criteria that goes into assessing which one is going on for you. So I guess the thing is that we want to really ensure that you're eating well and we're analyzing what's happening hormonally and symptomatically and trying to relieve the stress from the body so that your hormones can come back into balance naturally and ovulation occurs regularly.
Okay, yeah, and so the treatment for amenorrhea versus PCOS would be quite different, I'm imagining.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Thank you.
And with PCOS as well, because having a higher level of testosterone or androgens circulating in the system, it can also impact how your body is metabolizing sugar and mm-hmm. your sensitivity to sugar and insulin. And so for women with PCOS, they can have insulin resistance and issues with how they're managing their blood sugar levels, which sometimes you can also see with women that have an eating disorder as well, is if they're having, you know, quite low levels of sugar coming into their system and then sudden big spikes if they're binging, for example. And so then that also places extra stress on how their body is metabolizing sugar as well. So, yeah, it's about really going into depth, I guess, with that individual to understand what's happening for them.
Mm. It sounds like on the surface there can be quite a lot of overlap. So I guess you really need to dig deep into that. The problem with hormonal issues that cause us so much strife is that your hormones, you have hormone receptors throughout your entire body, so you have a minor hormonal imbalance and it can affect so many different parts of your body. So for, like you said, with insulin resistance, but luckily there are things we can do. And we're of course getting to the end of our time, but how do you usually suggest people or your patients might ease their symptoms of PCOS? Not necessarily a cure for PCOS, but how can they ease the symptoms they might be experiencing?
So a couple of things, just from simply diet and lifestyle perspective with PCOS, it's ensuring that you're eating a good variety of protein and fats and healthy carbohydrates, and you're eating simply and you're eating regularly, and so that you're helping to maintain and manage your blood glucose levels throughout the day. The other thing is exercise is important for women with PCOS because then it does increase their body's sensitivity to sugar. So if there's any insulin resistance going on, the exercise can be helpful for just opening up those cells to take in insulin more effectively. And that can also have a knock-on effect to how the body is signaling to the ovaries as well. Because when it knows when food's coming and activity's coming, then the ovaries function more efficiently because the body is moving out of a place of stress. When we don't know, you know, when we're sleeping, when we're active, when food's coming, the body moves into a state of higher stress. And so reproduction generally is happening when the body is safe and stable and working efficiently. And so reproductive hormones tend to become out of whack when we're, you know, nutrient deficient, there's stress on the system, and, you know, we're not sleeping well, or we're drinking a lot of caffeine or alcohol and got inflammation running in our body, then, you know, our hormones become out of whack. So looking after your general health in terms of, you know, your diet and lifestyle, sleeping, exercise, managing stress all plays a big part on what's happening hormonally. But then there's also a lot of great things that you can do herbally and nutritionally as well, just to help the body work more efficiently. So it's really understanding where you're at nutritionally, like if you're low in iron, for example, or vitamin D or low in zinc, then supporting those nutrients and those levels to come, you know, back into balance is really helpful for your hormonal health. And there are some great herbs as well that work really beautifully on hormonal metabolism in the body and better signaling for the ovaries as well and the brain.
Great, thank you. It sounds like routine also is quite from what you're describing, routine might be really helpful for anyone who's struggling with that. I wish we had more time to go into all of the herbs. That sounds so interesting, and I find that so fascinating. But thank you so much. You have given such a wonderful overview of just some really broad topics that are thrown in there into everyday language, and all this discussion about women's health that I think people, unfortunately, were just not educated on it enough in our general life. And it takes a lot of learning and understanding, and I am passionate that people shouldn't have to go pay for a medical appointment to understand just the basic concepts. So I really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Yeah, all good. And I just would like to add, Rach, too, especially for your audience that are younger, you know, girls that are getting their periods, say, you know, anywhere between really like 9 to 15 is like the age bracket these days. The hormonal system takes quite some time to mature. So this signaling and these puppet strings that grow and get established for girls takes up to 12 years for full maturation and development to finish. So it's normal to have irregularities in your cycle, have, you know, changes in your period quality in terms of like heaviness or pain or clots and things like that while your body is learning. It's like riding a bike, you know, you don't just jump on and you're straight off.
All right. Thank you so much. Yes. And it's a very, I think everyone can vouch for that, that the first at least 5 years of my period, it was just all over the place. And I thought, is it going to be like this forever? But it's not like that forever for most people. That's it does even out after a while. The final question that I would love to ask you, I ask this to all my guests, is what is one thing you wish you knew about your body when you were younger?
I would say that I needed to eat more protein. So the importance of protein in your diet, I guess from for me, I had the blessing of growing up in a household. I've been a vegetarian my whole life. My parents were really into natural health. And so we had heaps of up in Cairns, heaps of fresh fruit and veggies and, a great variety, heaps of colour. But one thing that wasn't, you know, highlighted as being a priority was the protein, our protein intake. So I think for girls and women, having that real balance between healthy carbs, protein and good fats is really important. And it's something that didn't really hit home until I did my nutrition component as part of my naturopathic degree as to, I'd really been underestimating how much protein that I needed growing up. So yeah, I think it's just being open and understanding your body and what you need. And, you know, I'm still a vegetarian, so I just compensate for, you know, getting my protein in other forms. So, you know, I'll have a smoothie or I make sure I have my eggs and nuts and seeds so that I'm still getting it in from those sources.
That's amazing. Yep. I'd love to have an expert come onto the show to talk all about that. There is so much to unpack, and I also don't eat meat, so I totally understand the struggle, but it can be done.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So, so amazing to talk to you today. And thank you for that awesome last answer. Very different to the ones that everyone else has given. I love that. thank you. I'll leave all details in the show notes of how everyone can find you, including links to your website and your product. Do you have an Instagram handle that you want anyone to follow?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to learn more about women's health and hormones, then head on over to @fem21. So it's FEM21, which is our Instagram, which is filled with really informative posts about hormonal health and helping just to support and inspire women to understand their bodies more and to make informed choices about how they can balance their hormones naturally.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you so much for listening to the About Your Body podcast.
I hope you found joy and comfort in learning about the biofemale body and the power that it holds. In the show notes, you will find links to the About Your Body Instagram page, which is full of free resources and illustrations explaining biofemale anatomy, as well as a link to the About Your Body Etsy store, where my art is available for purchase. And if you're a business, organization, or entrepreneur working in the women's health or women's empowerment space, we could work well together. Please reach out to me via my website, which is www.byrachelholt.com, if you'd like to hire me for graphic design or artistry services. Until next time, here's to learning about our bodies.